A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's time for another episode of Last Drinks, a podcast where we have conversations for the sober and the sober curious, hosted by me, Maz Compton, sober since 2015. Oh, hi, delightful human. It's another episode of Last Drinks. So my guest this week is Vanessa Gordon. She is a CEO. She's the CEO and publisher of East End Taste Magazine, which is a digital publication based in the Hamptons. Yes, that's right, the Hamptons. If you are a fan of Gossip Girl, you will know that all of the rich kids in New York have wealthy families with houses in the Hamptons. And that's where Vanessa lives, it's where she works, and it's where she had her last drink. It was really interesting chatting to Vanessa about the event that she was at where she had her last drink. And something that I was not expecting from this chat was for Vanessa to read out verbatim the text message exchange between her and an individual that she had met on the night in question. And it was really eye-opening to have those text messages read with a sober mind and to kind of unpack them and to really have a look at how that night could have ended very differently for Vanessa and her friend. So we're glad she's safe, and I'm so glad that she was bold enough to share openly a big part of that night and what went on. If you want to find out more about Vanessa, you can go to her website, vanessapgordon.com, or check out her magazine, eastendtastemagazine.com. Enjoy this episode of Last Drinks. I'll catch you next week. I grew up watching Sex and the City thinking New York is the bee's knees and that we all had to drink cosmopolitans to be classy and refined. And then I realized alcohol didn't work for me. With that said, Vanessa, thank you for joining me to talk about your last drink. You do join me from the other side of the world, so I appreciate that we've managed to figure out this time difference. But could you talk to me about your last drink? What was that like, and what was it, a cosmopolitan in Manhattan?
That would be quite interesting if it was. And I will tell you, I remember actually doing a Sex and the City tour, and one of the stops was to one of the local, I guess, perhaps not necessarily a speakeasy, but one of the bars that's featured on the show down in the West Village. And they gave us all cosmopolitans. And I'm not really I wasn't really a cosmopolitan drinker at all. But ironically, that cosmopolitan was so good, I recall. And they did it, they crafted it so well. That was back in March of 2022.
Right. And was that your last drink, the Cosmo?
No, that was some time ago. But no, I guess interestingly, that was a month before, no, excuse me, 2 months before I had my first, I want to say, significant hangover. So ironically, I didn't actually start drinking alcohol per se until I was in my mid to late 20s. I was 26 after my daughter was born. So I was late in starting. And I guess perhaps what was such a turnoff was in college, I would go to these parties and there would be perhaps what we call here in New York, that solo cup crowd. And It was just so trashy and tacky, for lack of better terms, at the moment. And I just didn't like how people behaved. And I liked, you know, I'm very big on being in control of what I do and of my body, especially at that time.
I spent a little bit of time at Wittenberg University. And so I can just explain, like, there is a really big drinking culture on campus. Well, there was where we went to college. And the solo cup thing that you speak of is like these oversized red plastic cups that we would probably play, like, you know, a foot cup game with or something. And my experience was that we would go, like, it was
any day of the week, there would be a party at one of the houses, one of the fraternities, one of the sororities. And the idea was like you had your red solo cup and you would you walk around campus with it upside down because then you're not traveling with booze. So if you have a red solo cup upside down, it means traveling to party. And then you get to the party and then someone's doing a keg stand and then your cup gets filled up with beer from the keg and then you all carry on and go crazy and then you migrate to the next sort of house or fraternity or sorority. But that culture was because you were in a bubble. We were on quite a small campus, I think, compared to like the really big universities and colleges. But it was so like the way it worked. There was like a microcosm of culture at this university. And it's like everyone was so invested and it was all about getting wasted. So I can absolutely, I mean, and I was the visiting honorary sorority girl member and everyone just thought I was amazing because I had an accent and my skin's a little different. And, you know, like I was such a novelty. So I had the best time at my college experience, but I can completely understand how you could have a completely flipped version of what that looked like behavior wise.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's interesting too, is I went to a smaller college for undergrad. I went to Manhattanville College in Purchase, New York, which is about a half hour north of New York City. And then for graduate school, which I went right into, I graduated early from undergrad, went right into NYU, but I was on the fast track to getting my master's degree in under a year and a half. And I just didn't have time to party at the time. I just always just kept myself busy. I don't even know how I perhaps avoided it in undergrad. Once again, I think graduating early, keeping as busy as I can. And I perhaps still have those qualities to a certain degree today, constantly like workaholic, just keeping myself busy. But out here where I live in the Hamptons on Long Island, which perhaps is known as being like the party, you know, destination or summer destination for the rich and famous, if you will.
Yes, we know that from Gossip Girl. Yeah. That, so, I mean, we talked about Sex and the City earlier, really shaping my cosmopolitan habit. But Gossip Girl is very like that socialite elite New York thing. Hamptons, everyone has a house in the Hamptons, and that's where you live.
That's correct. I live here full time, interestingly enough, which is, I won't say unusual, but unusual for that society crowd.
Wow.
Living here full time. I mean, well, not after the pandemic, a lot of people chose to live here full time. But anyway, I've been here for 12 plus years full time.
And so so you said after you became a mom, the drinking thing really sort of latched into your world. So what did that look like? Were you drinking daily with your mum friends or was it just a weekend thing? Like what, you know, how could you, I guess, explain your relationship with alcohol at that time?
So this is quite fascinating. So like I said, I didn't start drinking until later on in life or later than usual. So like when I was 21, I actually did not celebrate by drinking alcohol. I remember that very well. The only time I would drink before I was 26 was perhaps when I would go down to the Caribbean, which is rare, you know, once in a blue moon, and have, you know, cocktail on the beach, but only because I think I was under 21 and it was legal per se down there. But again, you know, nothing to any extreme, but and it's just, it's so fascinating that we bring this up because I just had lunch with someone and we were talking about, Sober October and how, now and really always, if I'm with someone who does not drink or for whatever reason it is, I have always not chosen not to drink in their presence, especially if they're a former addict, just out of respect. Mm-hmm. However, I also made it a point that, you know, a few years ago, or up until like recently this past year, I would also order a glass of wine or a drink if the person I was with was drinking in most circumstances, unless I was really tired or had to drive, et cetera. But yeah, I would do that equally, perhaps as a courtesy. The most, you know, there were certain pitfalls. I would say 2022 was a big year for me. That was the big wake up call in terms of just not drinking, because what was happening was I was going out more, traveling more, but especially going out more and socializing. But I would see, you know, how a lot of these women, I know they were looking for dates, boyfriends, or just lack of better, you know, hookup opportunities. And I've been married for, I've been with my husband for almost, you know, more than 16 years. So I never, I met him when I was 18. So I never was in that circuit. But I would still party and go hang out. And even this past year, I was really, you know, yes, partying a lot. But I always knew to a certain extent my limit, but, or did I? But thankfully, every situation I was in, I was very lucky. I was always with someone. I was never alone or with people I didn't know or trust. So right there, I mean, my biggest thing is I can't emphasize enough, always have a backup plan. If you feel like you can't draw, you know, don't even try. Don't mess around, because what I've seen, even just being sober this past summer, out here in the Hamptons, would blow anyone's mind. I mean, even it's really what it comes down to is guilt by association. If people, there were people that I was with that I didn't even realize had cocaine on them. And until they reveal it, you know, after 1 a.m. and you're in the car with them and you're like, whoa, you know, that's like, that's a big deal. Like, I didn't want to get caught with that. Yeah, it would wreck my reputation completely. But anyway, as far as specifically, there's one particular story that I'd love to share that I think is, you know, it was a huge wake up call. So I own a media company called East End Taste. And with that company, I'm invited to a lot of events, media dinners, et cetera, et cetera. I was invited to one particular restaurant. Now, out here where I live, the service, the cell phone service, is spotty at best. There will be pockets, especially when you go out to an area called Montauk and the Nat Peak stretch, which is just a long stretch of road, you know, sand, you know, beach on either side. There's no service there. So I would hate to break down per se or be in a situation where you need a phone. In addition, So there's a particular restaurant that I was invited to that was popping up at a restaurant that was for sale. Now, that restaurant space, if you will, did not have active Wi-Fi. Okay. And I always like to ask more in case of an emergency, you know, right when I arrive to a building, do you have Wi-Fi? That particular building did not. And I saw that I had no service. Now, you know, I was with a girlfriend of mine, and naturally I, you know, didn't raise any red flags at the time. So we arrive. It's a whole, you know, sushi omakase experience, and it looks really, amazing. Really nice, yeah. You know, very upscale, you know, sort of outdoors, but you know, who would think, but they asked me right away, do you want the sake pairing? I wasn't going to necessarily say no. And I should have said no, because I know sake is quite, in my opinion, way more dangerous than wine or any, it's very, very easy to drink. You know, the different types of sake we were drinking, some sweet, you know, more, you know, not as sweet, dry, et cetera. But at the rate they were pouring it, I mean, could you imagine it was a sake pairing with each course? And omakase is a long seven to 17 late tasting experience. So that's quite a lot of sake.
And sake is meant to be, I mean, I'm lucky that I've visited Japan a few times, and it's meant to be, it's a sip, right? Like that's the idea, is that it's meant, like that's the intention, is that it's meant to, you have it in this tiny little kind of like curated cup, like that traditionally it's meant to just be sipped on. But I think the way we use it in the Western world is very, because our drinking behavior, like the way we drink and the amount that we drink, we get something in a small glass and we're like, well, it's a shot. And you know what I mean? So our whole attitude towards something like sake is probably a little bit mixed up in the first place, let alone having 17 courses and rounds. And that's just really intense.
It was. I was drinking the sake like wine. And I was with my girlfriend who also got the sake pairing. And you know, you don't think of it at the time, and you think that everyone's going to be responsible. You know, you're a professional, you're technically working. But no, things, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've gone to events, functions, et cetera. It's everything but professional in the end, to a certain degree, I suppose. It came to a point where everyone had left, and I don't know how I ended up speaking with the owner. We were hanging out with the chef, and we were just all hanging out. But my friend and I were becoming inebriated. My friend, the way she was talking, I knew that she was not in her right frame of mind. I also knew that there was something wrong. You know, I knew that I was beyond intoxicated, but I was aware of what was going on, but I had no control over it. Now, interestingly, the owner kept pouring the sake, continued, did not stop. Like, my drink would be half full, continue pouring. And I realized what the intentions were. But then all of a sudden, my girlfriend goes to get up and she goes, I'm going to go home now. This is, we're talking now almost 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. She drove both of us, from near where I live. She picked me up in town here. And I knew, but interestingly enough, they were pushing my friend to leave, but they're saying, oh, let's call you an Uber. And I'm thinking, well, how could you have called me an Uber? Watch this. If there was no cell phone service, no one had cell phone service, how would you have been able to call me an Uber? Their plan, I believe, was to drive me. But what were they going to do? Well, I'll read you the text messages. This is coming from the owner. At some point while I was intoxicated, must have opened my phone somehow and texted as if it came from me. His name, great to meet you, - Vanessa Gordon. I don't write like that. Then he writes, where are you? And I wrote, we are okay. I'm riding home with my friend, making sure she's okay. So what happened was when they went to the back end of the restaurant to call an Uber, I went out with my friend. I knew I could not let her drive alone. I didn't care that I was intoxicated. She was. I would have rather have gotten stopped by the police and been arrested than to potentially have something happen to her or happen to me. And
that's a moral dilemma right there.
This is a way. I hope a wake up call to people like this can happen to you. This can happen. These little you never know. And this is by the profession, you know.
Are these text messages? So your assumption is, so this person took your phone out of your bag and started a text message conversation to make it look like you had been texting them.
I think my phone must have been open. I was out. Okay. He took my phone, put his number in, but he texted his name as if I texted it to him. So it's blue.
Got it. Blue. Okay.
Yeah, so I'm reading it. But I wouldn't write, great to meet you, - Vanessa Gordon. I wouldn't write like that. I would just say, like, hey, great meeting you. Vanessa. Sure. I wouldn't.
Yeah.
Then he writes, I'll let you know. Then I wrote, I'll let you, this is me, physically me writing.
Actually.
I'll let you know. Yes, maybe. I'll let you know as soon as we are both home. And then he writes, oh my God, you left, LOL. And then I write, I couldn't leave her, but I swear I'm good. Then I'm inebriated. He is like funny, but not, it's like terror. It's horrible. I mean, I'm like laughing almost to kind of calm my nerves here. And he writes, well, still kind of early. Let me know if you want to grab a drink somewhere. I mean, no. Like, you've got to be kidding me. And then I write, well, we're already in the village of Amagansett. Then he writes, sweet, I'm staying there. The blank hotel, I'm in that area anyway. Then I write, right, I know that hotel well. I'm already to my vehicle. Well, I'll see you around sometime. I'm trying to be polite at this point. Then he writes, Rosie's bar, one drink. And I write, I seriously didn't want you to worry, and I will also text you when I'm home, and I'll let you know when my friend is home. Then he writes, I'm leaving tomorrow night. Tonight is my last night here. Where's a good spot to grab a drink? And I write, well, if you want to go out on your own, you could go to Stephen Talkhouse. My dad used to be one of the owners. And I happen to know a lot of the people there. So I was like, oh yeah, good. Go there. Have fun. And then he writes, oh shit. I mean, oh sweet. You gonna come? And I go, oh no, I'm so embarrassed. Another time. And then he writes, why are you embarrassed? Let's go, one drink. I'm headed there now. Hope to see you. Vanessa? Vanessa, I'm here. Hope you're coming by. Done.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my last drink. That did it for me.
That's a lot.
my girlfriend called me. She was like, I'm never doing that again. So neither am I.
I'm really glad that your last drink wasn't at Rosie's Bar.
Well, it's too bad. He's got a girlfriend, partner, or two kids at home.
I mean, it's just...
It's like, come on now, dude.
I mean, it's relentless and it's full on. But here's, you know, I guess my takeaway from that is when you read those text messages out sober, you're like, why did I even entertain this? Like, where are my boundaries? It's a hard no. Why was I negotiating? Why was I compromising? Why was I feeling embarrassed? Right. Like, you, all of these things come to light and can really be articulated better when we're not inebriated with alcohol. But when you're in the drunken haze, your thoughts and your emotions and everything's so confusing that we start to apologize, we start to feel bad, and then we're like, oh my God, am I letting this person down? Maybe I should go. Oh, it's just one drink. And we can then tell ourselves a narrative that we are not supposed to be telling ourselves. And it's harder to really draw clear, healthy boundaries when, and I think that that conversation is very evident about how easy it can be to get sucked into somebody else's plan when you are not in full control of your thoughts, firstly, predominantly, and secondly, you know, your actions and your behavior. So that's, yeah, really, really eye-opening. And thank you for sharing that. That's deeply personal. And I do hope that that is a warning sign for some people who are like, I've got some text message banter in my phone that's similar. And maybe this is the line in the sand that I need, you know, to have a bit of a booze break or to pull up stumps. So after that night, you're like, right, I'm done for a bit. We're stopping for a while. I'm never drinking again. Like, what did that look like the next day for you when you'd kind of made that decision internally?
Absolutely. So that was if I recall correctly, that was a Monday night. So thankfully I didn't have any events until later on. Now I wanted to first and foremost be responsible, but also know that it wasn't going to take just that one time potentially to stop per se. So in the mix of the summer, depending upon the situation, I kept it light, if anything. But this is what I did. Now I don't necessarily know if this was the right thing to do. My girlfriend, they would order tequila and soda with lime. I would say, okay, I would say something like, just to be polite, and this is perhaps maybe my personality, just me warming up to, you know, because it's interesting, the culture here of people, you know, it's still a mixed bag in terms of how people are treated if they don't drink, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So I went out Labor Day weekend here, which is the big major holiday week, the last hurrah, if you will. I remember going out to one of the nightclubs here, and yeah, they were ordering tequila and soda with lime. So I would just say, do you want one too? I would say, oh, no, I'm not sure. I'm still looking at the menu, and there really was no menu. I'm just still thinking about what I want. I say, you go ahead. I'll meet you in the next room. So then I would just say to the bar, oh, just give seltzer and lime, thinking that they would automatically think it was tequila and soda. So that's what I was doing I don't want to say blend in, but just so I didn't get persuaded or get that peer pressure or being bugged about, oh, I got to relax. But what's interesting too is once I would order that and I was sipping it very, you know, casually, but at a more rapid pace, especially because there was no alcohol in it. It was funny how we met some younger guys there that were in their early 20s, and they would come, oh, you got to loosen up. They kept saying, you got to loosen up. Oh, here, have a beer. And I'm like, I'm good. I already got my drink. I'm good. So it's interesting how, you know, you get, you know, 10, you know, 10 or more people around you really trying to push it. It still doesn't seem to end, but, like I said, I don't know if I should have come out and said, no, I'm not drinking, but maybe they could have forced me more, but I'd rather have just kept it kind of on the down low.
I think, Vanessa, one thing I've learned from all of my conversations on this podcast is there is no right way. There is just the way that you choose through. And if you choose and you get through it, then it's okay. And then we can look back in hindsight and go, you know what? Maybe maybe I could have come clean and been like, hey, you know, maybe I could have made a bit more of a stand. But if you weren't comfortable owning that space at that point because you were just getting your head around your own sobriety or relationship with alcohol, that's okay to give yourself a breather and to not have to out yourself when you are maybe not equipped to deal with that pushback and those confrontational conversations that ultimately there's usually one jerk at a bar that will try and make you feel bad and like pin some guilt on you because you're not partaking in the social culture of getting wasted, which is what we've all grown up doing. And so if you weren't ready to tackle that, that's fine. Go order your own water, tell everyone, like it's okay to get yourself comfortable with where you're sitting before you let everybody else in on the journey. And also, you know, it sounds to me very much like you're really hardworking and you work, you know, I think working in events and that world, like people pleasing is a part of who you are as a person. Yep. And when you say that you're not drinking, not a lot of people are always pleased about that. And so I can understand that for you, that's going to cause a bit of disconnect, a bit of conflict. And then there's a whole other like social dynamic to navigate. Whereas, you know, temporarily or just in the early days or until you're comfortable, do you. Like it's your relationship with alcohol that you're reconciling. It's your brain cells that you're saving. It's your health that you're looking after. And if you are not ready to sing that from the rooftops today, that's cool, man. Like everyone, we don't always have to tell everyone everything all the time. It's okay to just keep things on the down low until you've almost built up that muscle and that confidence to then be like, I'm ready to say that I'm not drinking and here's my sober response that I can articulate really well. And or you might just, you know, tone down the socializing at nightclubs thing because you get bored earlier when you're not drinking if you're surrounded by drunk people. It's what I found in my experience. So I think, like, well done to you for figuring out something that worked for you in those really early days, which can be very tough when you don't want to feel like a social outcast. You don't want to have to, like, quit your job and lose your career because all of a sudden you're not drinking. So, you know, the industries that we work in sometimes, alcohol's a major, major part of what we do, but it doesn't mean you have to be a drinker to exist in those circles. So not that I'm wearing a physical hat, but my metaphorical hat is off to you for coming to a realization after a bit of a wake-up call and then making a really great decision for you and your health. I think the way you've managed it is absolutely fine. And my hope is that someone else will be like, oh, that's a great option. Maybe I'll tap into a little bit of that. So thank you for sharing your story.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's always a pleasure. I'm happy to help. And I'm hoping that my story resonates with others and, you know, they make the right, you know, right decisions for themselves going forward and perhaps not putting others, you know, for that's part of my people pleasing, part of, you know, who I am in terms of, you know, running a media company, putting on events as I'm always out to please everyone else, but I perhaps put myself last. And I think it's about time that I reverse that.
Thanks for listening. Make sure you click follow so you don't miss an episode. New episodes are published every Monday. You can follow us on TikTok at Last Drinks or catch up with me on Instagram at Maz Compton. Stay curious.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.